welcome to Higher Ground Live. I'm your host, Pastor Matthews, bringing you greetings from atop Higher Ground's world headquarters this Tuesday, the 12th day of December, 2006. And we are joining you today, as we do every day at this time, fighting the revisionists, fighting disinformation, fighting the spin doctors. That's right, we're busy forming a band of rival elites that will stand against those elites that are trying to take over this nation. We're busy forming a band of rival elites that will stand against those global elites that are trying to take over this planet. We do all of that by cultivating people. People like you. People like you who will cause the elite to retreat. That's what we do here at Higher Ground Live. That's what we do here at Higher Ground Bible College. And that's what we do here on this great Truth Radio Network as we broadcast around the world and across this great nation. We are busy empowering people like you with truth so that you can impact the lives of your neighbors. So that you can impact the lives of your friends, so that you can impact the lives of your families and coworkers. As always, we are standing firm on the front line of the war on people because we are a constant voice of reason. Blessed to be coming to you from atop Freedom Command Center, where we are regularly maintaining and regaining liberty. It is Tuesday night, and it is a blessing to be here with you. It's the second night in our week-long series of our League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. We are blessed with our favorite Tuesday night guest, Jack Smith. Jack, how are you?
I'm doing fine tonight, Pastor.
It is good to hear your voice. Hey, I've got a question for you, and I took the first part of our show last night and addressed something, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time addressing it again today, but I do want to draw attention to it one more time. And that's the preponderance of disinformation that I'm being extremely kind when I use that term. The preponderance of disinformation flowing about the internet regarding Biden youth was actually a little bit surprised to see you dragged into some of that as well. The majority of it, as near as I can tell, seems to be coming from a gentleman named Lewis Ewing.
Okay.
And I got another email from Mr. Ewing, and I'm going to say again what I said last night, Mr. Ewing. You're welcome to call me at 800-710-1099. But I want you to know that I'll disconnect the call if the conversation on the phone is filled with the profanities that your emails are. And my final admonition last night to everyone was, friends, just consider the score. You know, it is okay to disagree. We occasionally disagree amongst ourselves here in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And it's even okay if someone says, no, you guys are absolutely wrong. What you're doing is outrageous. But the use of the profanities and the extreme nature of all of his rantings, I can't really come up with a better word for it than that. Just lead me to believe that there is a problem there. You've been around for an awful long time. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Yes, I have. I don't know if I've had too much personal contact with the gentleman, but
that's
the nature of what he dislikes about what Barton is doing.
I think simply to sum it up, that Barton breathes bothers him. And I notice it bothers him that you do as well.
Okay.
You guys, when you founded Right Way Law, you did a great job and touched so many people so very much. He loves calling that wrong way.
I understand. There's a lot of people out there like that.
And I almost don't care what his credentials are or ever have been. If we can't sit at the table and have a rational discussion, I don't know why we would have any interest in involving ourselves.
Well, there you go. What in particular is his criticism?
Honestly, and I'm going to say this sincerely, I wasn't prepared for that question. I've read the emails. I haven't memorized them. I found them repugnant in the way they were addressing the issues. He had a couple points. One of his points was BOEs. It sounded like it was an extreme characterization of something that went on or didn't go on with the BOE. I haven't addressed it with Barton, nor do I intend to. But whatever his points are, they just, you know, they kind of fall on deaf ears on this end. I simply step back and say, just consider the source.
There you go. But, you know, it's always nice to learn from those people that act in that manner or are ugly or just don't. You know, whatever their point is, they're either in a personal nature, which the world has no business being in. If need to go. And also, too often, most patriots end up going after their brothers who are searching for the same answers as they are. The problem is if your brother isn't on your same path, there's a lot of people out there that want to start throwing stones at the guy that got off the path that they're on, thinking they're the only one that's right.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. I mean, if you take it and use a simple equation of carpentry, you could never get two carpenters to build a wall the same way.
All right.
But at the end of the day, carpenter A is going to look at carpenter B and say, your house looks good. Carpenter B says, so does yours.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see someone behaving like Mr. Ewing, I don't see room for him at the table.
Well, a lot of people are very small and very insecure in what they are, and they feel that if everybody does not agree with them, then you must be their enemy, and that you must be accusing them of being wrong. And in reality, to get from the start, which is when the Father put us in the world, to the end, which is when we're going to be before the white throne judgment, there isn't any right or wrong way. It's just going to depend upon what you know, what you understand, and what you learned in your journey, so that when you're at that white throne judgment, you're going to know what it's all about, what you're there for, and what you're prepared to do.
Judging by the rantings, the profanities, it seems like perhaps his meds are not up to date. Maybe get a little stronger dose of Ritalin.
That might be it, too.
I'm not sure what it is. Either update the meds or quit the caffeine.
There you go. One of the three.
What interesting things do you have for us today?
Number of things that we have kind of been doing. One of the things that we were looking at here yesterday in our Monday night meeting was the whole concept about contacting Secretaries of State to get filings done. And one of the things we learned, because one of the gentlemen in our Monday night class had sent in a filing on a UCC-1 to get recorded in the Secretary of State's record. And he got a letter back from the Secretary of State, which basically stated to him that we don't see any purpose in what you're trying to do here, particularly that we don't have any reason that the Secretary of State ought to file this under the statute provision. And so, therefore, we've packed up all your material you sent to us, plus your tender of payment to the filing, and are returning it to you. And so it came back. Now, there's a lot of people that have tried to put in UCC filings, and they get everything back. And in this particular case, though, most everything this guy did was under the provisions of the Uniform Commercial Code. It was a Baylor-Bailey filing notice, and he got it back, and all of the required blanks in that UCC were filled in appropriately and completely as they were supposed to be. And so he looks at me and says, what's going on here? So I had him go online and download all the statutes and all of the state administrative code with respect to the duties of filing officers, particularly the Secretary of State, when it came to Uniform Commercial Code filing. And we looked all those over, and we were very surprised when we looked at the whole picture of the administrative code and the UCC statutes in Ohio, what it generally said. And I don't have it right in front of me, but I can pretty much paraphrase what was going on there. First of all, it says in the code and the reg, the Secretary of State has no duty to verify any of the information. And just because the Secretary of State files it does not mean that the facts therein are true or not, or that there is any substance there by the filer or not. And then the reg very carefully suggests that it's up to the filer or the submitter to make sure that he has followed all of the appropriate steps to have a substantive filing in the system.
what those number of issues are right after the break. Zach, you come up with some reasons that the Secretary of State is giving for not accepting UCC filings?
That's correct, Pastor. One of the reasons is that you don't submit a filing date. And that seems to make some sense, I guess. Everybody's entitled to be compensated. And so that's the reason why he can refuse. Now, there, in the Uniform Commercial Code, Article 9, Section, 516, it does give reasons why a filing may not be effective. And it would be reasons why the Secretary of State could refuse it. Now, he goes on in 516 and says the following. Under subpart A, it said, except as provided in Division B of this section, communication of a record to a filing office and tender of the filing fee or acceptance of the record by the filing office constitutes a filing. Now, under A, we've got one of those legal terms, the word or. And if anybody has been studying law for like any period of time, you'll find out that the shortest words are the ones that create the most problems for you. Because if you look up the definition of or can mean or as we understand it, but or can also mean and. And if the word or means and in the particular legal writing, then both conditions have to apply. So under A here, what it's saying is except as provided in B, and we're going to get into B in a second, it says the communication of a record to a filing office and the tender of the filing fee constitutes filing. So if you send it to the Secretary of State and it does not violate provision D that we're going to get into, if the word or means or, you've got it filed. And that's, of course, what everybody's trying to do, get their UCC-1 file.
So, so how should we regard it when they send it back?
Well, you see, if it says, if the word or means and in A, then the sentence reads, if you tendered it to the officer and with the filing fee, and it's accepted by the filing officer, it's filed. So there or would be and, wouldn't it? And so if the filing officer, the Secretary of State, sends it back, if the word or meant and in subpart A here, it's not filed because both conditions were not present. So when a judge, you know, let's say you would bring this into a court and say, excuse me, Your Honor, I rely on the fact that all these door and I tendered it to the Secretary of State with the filing fee, so it's filed. The judge is going to say, if he was in black and white, well, excuse me, you're assuming that the word or means or in the conventional sense, either or, and doesn't mean and both required. But we, as judges, have to sit there and we can't look at just the isolated sentence. We have to construe the whole law as written to determine whether the legislature meant or and for the word or in any particular place. Now, as I go into B and D in this section, you're going to see that if you're sitting here as a judge trying to determine whether or means or means and, you're going to get enough information out of the rest of this statute to tell you how to interpret it. And it's going to be very important to what we're doing and trying to achieve. Now, under B, before we decide whether or means or and, let's go into B and find out whether or not something that you did or didn't do would violate Section B, because it says in A, except it's provided in Division B. And in Division, Subdivision B, it says, filing does not occur with respect to a record that a filing officer refuses to accept because And then it lists eight separate reasons why the filing officer can refuse to accept that UCC filing. And under Article 9, Section 516, it constitutes an ineffective filing if you've screwed up under these 8 points. But under the 8 points themselves, there's subdivision of points. So in reality, there's not just eight. There's about 17 different things that have to happen, or you can't violate those, or else it's not recorded. Now, those people have studied law long enough, those people that have heard me talk and teach long enough, understand that it's more important what isn't said than what is said.
Right.
And it's also more important what they do in the negative instead of what they do in the positive. Because remember, Section D are all negatives here. They're all things you can't do. And if you do any of the things you can't do, and you do those things you can't do on your filing is not filed if the officer refuses it. Now, where we're going to on this thing tonight is, when I showed the guy in our Monday night class these statutes, I said, the Secretary of State rejected your filing, didn't he? And he said, yeah. I said, according to their own statutes and regulations, he had no legal reason to reject it, did he? And the guy goes, absolutely true. He couldn't reject this. But he rejected me anyway. And I said, okay, when we get to Article 9, Section 516, Subparagraph D, so I'm going to bring you the ending before we bring you the middle, under Subparagraph D, here is what it says to you. A record that is communicated to the filing officer with tender of a filing fee. Remember under Section A? It said if you tender a record with a filing fee to the officer, it's filed. If four means are. Okay? In D, it says a record that is communicated to the filing officer with tender of a filing fee, but that the filing office refused to accept for a reason other than those specified in Division D of this section, is effective as a filed record. What did he just say? It said that if you tender it to the filing officer, you mail your UCC 1, or whatever UCC record is, to the Secretary of State, and you tender with it a sufficient filing fee, an amount, post the money, or whatever, and if the Secretary of State's office refuses your filing and sends it back, and they either A, don't give you a reason, or give you a reason other than the one specified in Division B, these 17 things that I haven't gone through yet, it says your filing is effective. In other words, you just file it even though the officer told you it wasn't filed. It's filed.
That's very interesting. I kind of thought that's where you were going. You set it up pretty well.
Yeah. So, I mean, even when he sends it back and says you're not filed, you're effectively filed.
Okay, now, might one thing that comes to mind when you say that is, might it be necessary for someone to perfect that point in order for it to actually not fall out of favor, for lack of a better term?
Well, this particular gentleman is not going to be satisfied and happy just reading what I read, which basically says, hey, even though he sent it back or filed effectively,
right. Well,
there is another provision. We're probably not going to have time to get to that tonight, but there is another provision which basically says in the administrative code in Ohio, and if it's in Ohio, I guarantee it's in all these other states too. Okay? In other words, what I'm telling you, let's get to the bottom end of it. One of the things Gene Keating did in all of his studies and research on Admiralty Maritime is that under Admiralty Maritime, there is such a thing called a, quote, secret lane, unquote.
That's right.
And the whole Admiralty Maritime system operates on this presumption that a properly drawn secret lien prevails as far as the claim in Admiralty, unless rebutted. Now, think of the implication. The Internal Revenue Service always files a notice of lien. They never file a lien. That's because the lien's a secret lien. It can't appear in public. Does that mean it has no force and effect of law? Absolutely not. Admiralty is king. Okay? What are you doing when you're trying to file an appropriate UCC-1 so that the secured party, i.e., the living man's bailee, is going to have authority to make decisions with respect to the constructive trust for the benefit of the living man, the bailor? Well, if you get to the point of understanding that you're the ultimate creditor and that you can stand up and from afar, in other words, outside of their system, not appearing in their system because the living man cannot appear in their system, it's the world of the dead. But you can still appear through agency so that the agent appears in that Admiralty Maritime system to carry on and protect your interest therein, even though you cannot appear as a living man in that world because it's a different world than yours. The concept is that the living man has a secret lien, which does not ever appear in public in that world, but it gives priority. So that what some of these UCC filings are doing when they're filing these security interests or Baylor-Bailey agreements is you're literally giving the world of the dead, i.e. the corporate United States and that whole system, notice that you understand what's going on, and you're not going to argue or make work there against that rule there, but you are going to protect your interest with a secret lien. Well, they don't want to register that in the public and make it appear so everybody can open it up and see what's going on. So the Secretary of Treasury or Secretary of State says, I'm rejecting it, sends it back, and so it's not filed, but in reality, it's a secret lien. It's effective.
Okay.
But if you start arguing, you're going to warfare, and by going to warfare, the lien's removed because you can't have protection.
Interesting concept.
So after the break, we'll come back and go over those 8 to 17 points, and you're going to see that the majority of the time, you're right in the correctness, and that they're not really fighting you. They're seeing if you understand the way the game's played, and you're going to have your lien notwithstanding.
No, friends, there is nothing wrong with your dial. Hey there, idea. I'm Pastor Matthew, and I hope you enjoyed those commercials that we didn't have, because once again, the gremlins are running amok in the system. And we've got a technician here who can take a peek at all that. Just know that that is what's going on right now. Anyway, Jack, that's okay. It gives us more time with you. You've got 17 reasons why the Secretary of State is your friend and not your enemy.
There you go. Under B, it says a filing does not occur with respect to a record that a filing officer refuses to accept because, one, the record is not communicated by a method or medium of communication authorized by the filing office. Let's think about that for a second. In other words, if you send a roll of toilet paper into him and say, record this or file this, he's going to go, excuse me, I didn't authorize UCC once he filed on the back of a roll of toilet paper. So your medium is improper and not authorized. For instance, after the year 2000, most of the states went to a provision that stated that if you're going to file a Uniform Commercial Code filing with this office, it must be on the standard national UCC style form. So they made a rule and a regulation that says if you try to file and it's not on one of the approved forms, we're not going to accept it. And so under B1, it says, hello, if you don't use the appropriate style of the form that we ask you to use, we can refuse to accept it. Now, under Article 9, Section 516, if they refuse it because you didn't use the proper medium, was approved, then it's not final. So the question is, when they send back something you tried to file, and they said it was refused, the first question you've got to ask yourself, is this an approved form that I sent them? And if it was an approved form that you sent them, but they refused it anyway, then you've got one out of the 17 points that says, well, excuse me, if this was the only reason that they used or could apply, then it's effectively filed anyway because I used the proper medium and communication. Now, by communication, I mean there were a lot of Secretary of State that for a period of time would not allow email or electronic internet filing. So if they didn't permit it, that would be a means of communication that you didn't do what they told you that they were set up to receive. And therefore, they could reject you under B1 and say that you failed to use the proper form of communication to deliver your filing to this office, and therefore we're refusing it. And they have a legitimate reason under Article 9, Section 516B for doing that. But you're going to see as we go through all 17 of these that basically the only reason they have for rejecting something is by reason, logic, and common sense that whatever it is you've done, you didn't follow the simple rules that they gave you, or else you failed to give them absolutely necessary information that was necessary on the form to make it effective. Number two. You did not provide an amount equal to or greater than the applicable filing fee as tendered. So it means you didn't pay them what you were supposed to pay them, either equal to or more than what the filing fee was. Number three, and it has a number of subparts in number three. In number three, the filing office is unable to index the record because, number one, in the case of an initial finance statement, the record does not provide the name for the debtor. So once again, since it's going to be indexed on the debtor, because basically you're making the debtor liable for whatever the creditor, the secured party, is asking, if you don't provide the name for the debtor, who are we going to apply the lien against? And if you don't supply that name, we can't index it. Therefore, we're going to reject it because it's incomplete. What, are we going to file something for someone that we have no clue who it applies to? Under 3B, in the case of an amendment or correction statement, the record does not identify the initial financing statement, which is required under UCC Article 9-512. Or 9-518. So if you're trying to file a continuation statement, which you have to do every 5 years if it's not a transmitting utility, and you don't provide the initial financing statement number so that they can index it to a finance statement which is currently expiring, they can reject your continuation filing because they don't know where to apply it to. And under 3, it also states if it doesn't identify an initial financing statement whose effectiveness is lapsed. In other words, if you try to continue something after it's lapsed, it's meaningless. They're going to reject it. They're going to send it back to you. So there's three or four more conditions on which they can legitimately come back and say, okay, we're rejecting your filing. Under 3C, in the case of an initial financing statement that provides the name of a debtor identified as an individual, or an amendment that provides the name of a debtor identified as an individual that was not provided previously in the financing statement to which the record relates, and the record does not identify the debtor's last name. apply? And so it's again ambiguous. Is there anything, Pastor, and anything we've read so far that gives the Secretary of State the ability to make some kind of determination that he doesn't like what you're doing or who you are or anything, and he's going to reject it as being a fraud or ambiguous?
No, nothing at all.
Nothing at all. It all technically deals with, did you fill the form out correctly? And that's the point. The rest of these points are going to be the same thing. Did you fill out the form completely and accurately so that we can index the form? Did you pay us our filing fee? Did you communicate your document to us on the proper form and in the proper manner? That's basically what's covered under Article 9, Section 516, Subpart D. And remember, it says a filing that does not occur with respect to a record that a filing officer refuses to accept because of these reasons is the reason why they can reject it and it's not filed. But then when we go back to D again, it says, hey man, if you filled out the form correctly, if you paid the filing fee, and you communicated the form to the filing officer, you're effectively filed, even if he refuses you. Let's go back to A again. Remember, A had that word form in there, didn't it?
It did.
And we're trying to figure out whether that word or means or can't. That's critical. Because there's two conditions in A. First condition is that you send the record to the office and you've got a filing fee with it. The second condition is that the filing officer accepted it. Now, according to D, it says that if you didn't violate Section B of this article section, your file, whether the filing officer refuses you or not. So under Subprint D of Article 9, Section 516, does that stipulate to you that the word or actually means or? You bet it does, because we don't have to have the consent of the filing officer if he hasn't stipulated that we violated one of the provisions of B.
So, bottom line comes down to, they have no choice but to accept the filing.
If you have done them correctly by using the proper form, filling in the proper blank in that form completely and accurately, appropriately tendering the package to the Secretary of State along with a sufficient filing fee, they can't reject them under 1309.516. Now, basically, if you read the rest of their statutes and everything, it basically says that that is the only provision that he lawfully and legally has to reject it. But the fact is, they're going to reject it for a number of different reasons or whatever they say they're using, and they're going to send them back to you from time to time to see what it is they're going to do.
But, Jack, you really think that they're actually sitting there saying, okay, now, let's just test this guy, see how smart he is.
Well, hey, it works most of the time because somebody comes back and goes to argue like a worker.
Yeah, but don't you think that what they're really doing is that they're really clueless about their own system and they're saying, we don't know what this thing is, we're sending it back. And the reality is that they don't even know their own law. The fact is that despite the fact that they sent it back, according to their own law, it's filed.
You preach the gospel without seeming to understand it or peruse it and have some idea that what you're telling your parishioners or your people are true?
No.
Are you suggesting then that the officers of government have never read the regulations and the laws under which they're bound to perform?
I won't say that none of them have, but I would suggest that most of them haven't. You know, I recall a case in I think it was Massachusetts, where had to do with their Medicare program, I believe, or welfare program, one of those two, Medicaid or welfare, one of those programs. And one of the workers was just reading one of the government brochures. I mean, she was just like sitting around bored to death, and she's reading it, and as she's reading it, she's realizing, hey, we never did this. We never requested this. And so she worked it a little bit and ended up getting $500 million back to the state of Massachusetts. And they gave her a $10,000 bonus. The point is that, no, I don't think any of them knew what they were doing. I think she just stumbled across something that was there, and no one in her office knew anything about that at all. And before you respond to that, I'm going to tell you, we get 30 seconds. If the breaker wasn't right.
Well, certainly there's things that people do in those offices that come up, and when they find out different ways, they do them different. But I would propose to you that the acceptance of these documents, we just read a couple of statutes within several hours, and we understood completely what was going on. The problem is, I don't think any of the patrons have ever read these things.
You're probably right about that. With that, we should be up to a break, so I'm Pastor Matthews. Jack, looks like you're being blessed tonight. Less and less commercial time than normal, so go ahead right back to where you were.
Okay, let's go into the Ohio administrative code here, because this is very interesting with respect to what we just learned. In the administrative code, section 111-11-25, refusal errors is the title. It says the following. If a secured party or a remitter demonstrates to the satisfaction of a filing officer that a UCC record that was refused for filing should not have been refused, the filing officer will file the UCC record as provided in this chapter with a filing date and a time assigned when such filings occur. The filing officer will also file a filing officer statement that states the effective date and time of the filing, which shall be the date and time the UCC record was originally tendered for filing. Now we're getting to the bottom of what's going on here. Let's say you zing some filing in to the Secretary of State, and he decides, hey man, we're going to test this guy and see what he is. And so the filing officer refuses the filing and the filing fee and sends it back to you. Okay? We just showed you under Ohio Revised Code, which is the equivalent of the National Article 9, Section 516, Supplement D, that the filing is effective notwithstanding the alleged refusal if you have provided every condition under 9-516 Supplement D. Now let's assume that you didn't violate Article 9-516B, but you were refused anyway. Under the administrative code here of 111-11-25, can't you write a letter rogatory back to that filing officer and say, excuse me, officer, I don't understand what's going on here. Doesn't your own record under Article 9, Section 516, Subpart D, suggest quite strongly that it would be an error for you to refuse the filing if I have complied with all the provisions of 9-516D? And doesn't he stipulate that notwithstanding even your alleged refusal of my filing, does that basically destroy the effectiveness of my filing anyway? Attached with my letter, rogatory herewith, requesting that you review your decision with respect to your alleged refusal to file my UCC filing, to review it to determine 111-11-25. Now see where he's going to go on that, because you said, excuse me, if you didn't raise the reason under B, I'm effectively filed anyway. You may as well go ahead and put it in the record or show me why you should not be putting it in the record. Now, number one, you're not accusing him. Number two, you're not arguing. You're asking him questions. But number three, you're asking him to reconsider and review it. And number four, you're suggesting that according to his own record, even if he doesn't file it again, it's still effectively filed according to his own statutes and regulations anyway. So why wouldn't he go ahead and file it?
You do such a great job going to peace and still getting results.
Absolutely. Now, what happens is if you come back and start arguing with this guy, why would you argue with someone in which that guy's own regulations, laws, and codes stipulate that you've already won? See, you didn't do anything wrong. If anybody did anything wrong, it was the filing officer who had no authority to do what he did.
Yeah, but he's sitting there thinking that he, I got to say this, Jack, I don't believe for a second he's saying, okay, it's really filed, but we're going to send it back. I think he's really thinking he rejected it.
But on the other side of the coin, the reason why he's really doing that is because you're trying to appear from a foreign world and you're saying, hey, I know your game. I understand your game. And I'm coming in as the creditor, and you expect everybody within the game to act as debtor. But I'm not going to act as the debtor. I'm going to come in as the creditor. Now, that officer is protecting that public system, but his highest duty is to protect you. But he's got to protect you colorably. He cannot say to you in black and white truth, oh, you finally understood it. You're a creditor. You're coming in peace. You're a nice guy. We're going to let you come in and get whatever you want. If he started saying that, and it was in writing or in any kind of evidence that you could pass that on to your family, your friends, and everybody else, and for your whole adult life when you've been searching truth and start finding it and try to convey it to the rest of the people in this world that you found truth and they haven't got it, and they're looking at you like you're a withering lunatic, if the officer actually ended up handing you in black and white a win, you could start passing that out to all your friends saying, see, I told you, and the next moment they'd all be down there with that filing officer, go, me too. So what the filing officer is doing is he's protecting the nature of that public system from being exposed. But since his highest duty is to protect the unalienable rights of the living who are acting responsibly, he can't deny your filing. So he's got to deny your filing in the face of the public so that they will not believe you, but he can't deny the substance of your filing to protect your rights, so his statutes protect you because they say you're filed, even when the officer tells a lie so the rest of the public will not believe you and blindly follow you into salvation.
Yeah, but now, when you sort of utilize that filing, there is no evidence of a filing.
That's the nature of a secret lien. Is there any evidence the IRS has got a secret lien against you?
No.
Duh, who wins, the IRS or you? The one with the secret lien wins. What I'm suggesting is you just file the secret lien. The reason it's secret is because the public won't recognize it officially. You're the highest form now. You've got your secret lien filed. Unless you come in and start filing the very people that gave you the remedy, if you start fighting them, then you're in treason and dishonor. And remember, the standard is no enemy during times of war gets the remedy. So by your actions of fighting these people, if you said you can't reject my filing, you're at warfare, and now because you're at warfare, even though you had done everything right and it was effective, child that's now withdrawn because you've gone to war, and you can't get a remedy when you're at war.
Jack, interesting theory, but why do I feel better when I have a paper with a gold seal and a ribbed stamp on it that says, yeah, you did it right, and here's the acknowledgement.
How many people witness the Father in heaven say to the Messiah on his baptism, behold my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased? How many witnesses were there at that time to that statement?
A whole lot.
There were a couple of the apostles or a couple of the people standing around that heard that statement. But basically, the only reason we know of it is because later on, it was recorded in a book that went into a Bible that created a record. But from the public records of that day, there was no one there that recorded the good deed that the Messiah did, because it was on the private side, not the public side of the world.
That's an interesting point.
You're on the private side, not the public side of these registrations and recordings. The IRS is filing their lien on the private side. They're not on the public side. Mark Fuchs went into court, and what did he do when he went into court? Didn't he ask the judge to certify a claim?
Correct.
Why didn't the judge certify a claim?
Can't do it.
Why can't he do it?
Because
the public has no claim, it's private, and no private party came in and certified it.
Correct.
It was a secret lien.
Sounds like you can go all kinds of places with this. We've got 30 seconds.
There's tremendous ramifications, but the biggest thing, let's not go into the secret lien. Let's go into the provisions in the statute, which basically said even when the public officer said something wasn't done, the statute said, oh, yeah, it was anyway.
We're going to have to do that in our next show, though.
There you go.
Because we're out of time. You've got about 10 seconds to wrap it up.
The issue is, when you get rejected by a public officer, you better investigate the way